That night and the next were sleepless ones for Sam Peebles. He lay awake in his bed, all the second-floor lights turned on, and thought about Dave Duncan's last words. She waits. Toward dawn of the second night, he began to believe he understood what the old man had been trying to say. Sam thought that Dave would be buried out of the Baptist church in Proverbia, and was a little surprised to find that he had converted to Catholicism at some point between 1960 and 1990. The services were held at St. Martin's on April 11th, a blustery day that alternated between clouds and cold early spring sunshine. Following the graveside service, there was a reception at Angle Street. There were almost 70 people there, wandering through the downstairs rooms or clustered in little groups by the time Sam arrived. They had all known Dave and spoke of him with humor, respect, and unfailing love. They drank ginger ale from styrofoam cups and ate small finger sandwiches. Sam moved from group to group, passing a word with someone he knew from time to time, but not stopping to chat. He rarely took his hand from the pocket of his dark coat. He had made a stop at the Piggly Wiggly store on his way from the church, and now there were half a dozen cellophane packages in there, four of them long and thin, two of them rectangular. Sarah was not here. He was about to leave when he spotted Lukey and Rudolph sitting together in a corner. There was a cribbage board between them, but they didn't seem to be playing. "Hello, you guys," Sam said, walking over. "I guess you probably don't remember me."
"Sure we do," Rudolph said. "What'd you think we are? Couple of Phoebes? You're Dave's friend. You came over the day we was making the posters."
"Right," Lukey said.
"Did you find those books you were looking for?"
Rudolph asked.
"Yes," Sam said, smiling. "I did, eventually."
"Right!"
Lukey exclaimed.
Sam brought out the four slender cellophane packages. "I brought you guys something," he said. Lukey glanced down, and his eyes lit up.
"Slim Jim's, Dolph," he said, grinning delightedly. "Look! Sarah's boyfriend brought us all fucking Slim Jims. Beautiful."
"Here, give me those, you old rummy,"
Rudolph said and snatched them.
"Fuckhead would eat them all at once and then shit the bed tonight, you know," he told Sam.
He stripped one of the Slim Jims and gave it to Lukey.
"Here you go, Dinkweed. I'll hang on to the rest of them for you."
"You can have one, Dolph. Go ahead."
"You know better, Lukey. Those things burn me at both ends."
Sam ignored this byplay. He was looking hard at Lukey. "Sarah's boyfriend? Where did you hear that?" Lukey snatched down half a Slim Jim in one bite, then looked up. His expression was both good-humored and sly. He laid a finger against the side of his nose and said,
"Swart gets around when you're in the program, Sonny Jim. Oh, yes, indeed, it do."
"He don't know nothing, mister,"
Rudolph said, draining his cup of ginger ale.
"He's just beating his gums 'cause he likes the sound."
"That ain't nothing but bullshit,"
Lukey cried, taking another giant bite of Slim Jim.
"I know, because Dave told me. Last night, I had a dream, and Dave was in it, and he told me this fella was Sarah's sweetie."
"Where is Sarah?" Sam asked. "I thought she'd be here."
"She spoke to me after the benediction," Rudolph said. "Told me you'd know where to find her later on, if you wanted to see her. She said you'd seen her there once already."
"She liked Dave awful much,"
Lukey said. A sudden tear grew on the rim of one eye and spilled down his cheek. He wiped it away with the back of his hand.
"We all did. Dave always tried so goddamn hard. It's too bad, you know. It's really too bad.
And Lukey suddenly burst into tears. Well, let me tell you something, Sam said. He hunkered down beside Lukey and handed him his handkerchief. He was near tears himself, and terrified by what he now had to do, or try to do. He made it in the end. He died sober. Whatever talk you hear, you hold on to that, because I know it's true. He died sober.
Amen,
Rudolph said reverently.
Amen,
Lukey agreed. He handed Sam his handkerchief.
Thanks.
Don't mention it, Lukey.
Hey, you don't have any more of those fucking Slim Jims, do you?
Nope, Sam said, and smiled. You know what they say, Lukey? One's too many, and 1,000 are never enough. Rudolph laughed. Lukey smiled, then laid the tip of his finger against the side of his nose again.
How about a quarter? Wouldn't have a quarter, would you?
Sam's first thought was that she might have gone back to the library. But that didn't fit with what Dolph had said. He had been at the library with Sarah once, on the terrible night that already seemed a decade ago. But they had been there together. He hadn't seen her there, the way you saw someone through a window, or... Then he remembered when he had seen Sarah through a window, right here at Angle Street. She had been part of the group out on the back lawn, doing whatever it was they did to keep themselves sober. He now walked through the kitchen as he had done on that day, saying hello to a few more people. Bert Iverson and Elmer Baskin stood in one of the little groups, drinking ice cream punch as they listened gravely to an elderly woman Sam didn't know. He stepped through the kitchen door and out onto the rear porch. The day had turned gray and blustery again. The backyard was deserted, but Sam thought he saw a flash of pastel color beyond the bushes that marked the yard's rear boundary. He walked down the steps and crossed the back lawn, aware that his heart had begun to thud very hard again. His hand stole back into his pocket, and this time came out with the remaining 2 cellophane packages. They contained bullseye red licorice. He tore them open and began to knead them into a ball, much smaller than the one he'd made in the Dotson on Monday night. The sweet, sugary smell was just as sickening as ever. In the distance, he could hear a train coming, and it made him think of his dream, the one where Naomi had turned into Ardelia.
Too late, Sam. It's already too late. The deed is done.
She waits. Remember, Sam. She waits.
There was a lot of truth in dreams, sometimes. How had she survived the years between? All the years between? They had never asked themselves that question, had they? How did she make the transition from one person to another? They had never asked that one either. Perhaps the thing which looked like a woman, named Ardelia Lortz, was, beneath its glamours and illusions, like one of those larvae that spin their cocoons in the fork of a tree, cover them with protective webbing, and then fly away to their place of dying. The larvae in the cocoons lie silent, waiting, changing.
She waits.
Sam walked on, still kneading his smelly little ball made of that stuff the library policeman, his library policeman, had stolen and turned into the stuff of nightmares. The stuff he had somehow changed again, with the help of Naomi and Dave, into the stuff of salvation. The library policeman, curling Naomi against him, placing his mouth on the nape of her neck, as if to kiss her, and coughing instead. The bag hanging under Ardelia Thing's neck, limp, spent, empty.
Please don't let it be too late.
he walked into the thin stand of bushes. Naomi Sarah Higgins was standing on the other side of them, her arms clasped over her bosom. She glanced briefly at him, and he was shocked by the pallor of her cheeks and the haggard look in her eyes. Then she looked back at the railroad tracks. The train was closer now. Soon they would see it. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Sarah.
Sam put an arm around her waist. She let him, but the shape of her body against his was stiff, inflexible, ungiving.
Please don't let it be too late, he thought again,
and found himself thinking of Dave. They had left him there at the library, after propping the door to the loading platform open with a rubber wedge. Sam had used a payphone 2 blocks away to report the open door. He hung up when the dispatcher asked for his name. So Dave had been found, and of course the verdict had been accidental death, and those people in town who cared enough to assume anything at all would make the expected assumption. One more old sot had gone to that great gin mill in the sky. They would assume he had gone up the lane with a jug, had seen the open door, wandered in, and had fallen against the fire extinguisher in the dark. End of story. The post-mortem results, showing zero alcohol in Dave's blood, would not change the assumptions one bit. Probably not even for the police.
People just expect a drunk to die like a drunk, Sam thought, even when he's not.
How have you been, Sarah? He asked. She looked at him tiredly. Not so well, Sam. Not so well at all. I can't sleep. Can't eat. My mind seems full of the most horrible thoughts. They don't feel like my thoughts at all. And I want to drink. That's the worst of it. I want to drink and drink and drink. The meetings don't help. For the first time in my life, the meetings don't help.
She closed her eyes and began to cry. The sound was strengthless and dreadfully lost. No, he agreed softly. They wouldn't. They can't. And I imagine she'd like it if you started drinking again. She's waiting, but that doesn't mean she isn't hungry.
She opened her eyes and looked at him. What? Sam, what are you talking about?
Persistence, I think, he said. The persistence of evil. How it waits. How it can be so cunning and so baffling and so powerful. He raised his hand slowly and opened it. Do you recognize this, Sarah?
She flinched away from the ball of red licorice which lay on his palm. For a moment her eyes were wide and fully awake. They glinted with hate and fear, and the glints were silver. Throw that away, she whispered. Throw that damn thing away.
Her hand jerked protectively toward the back of her neck, where her brownish red hair hung against her shoulders. I'm talking to you, he said steadily. Not to her, but to you. I love you, Sarah.
She looked at him again, and that look of terrible weariness was back. Yes, she said. Maybe you do. And maybe you should learn not to.
I want you to do something for me, Sarah. I want you to turn your back to me. There's a train coming. I want you to watch that train and not look back at me until I tell you. Can you do that?
Her upper lip lifted. That expression of hate and fear animated her haggard face again. No. Leave me alone. Go away.
Is that what you want? He asked. Is it really? You told Dolph where I could find you, Sarah. Do you really want me to go?
Her eyes closed again. Her mouth drew down in a trembling bow of anguish. When her eyes opened again, They were full of haunted terror and brimming with tears.
Oh, Sam, help me. Something is wrong, and I don't know what it is or what to do.
I know what to do, he told her. Trust in me, Sarah, and trust in what you said when we were on our way to the library Monday night. Honesty and belief. Those things are the opposite of fear. Honesty and belief.
It's hard, though, she whispered. Hard to trust. Hard to believe.
He looked at her steadily. Naomi's upper lip lifted suddenly, and her lower lip curled out, turning her mouth momentarily into a shape that was almost like a horn.
Fuck yourself, she said. Go on and fuck yourself, Sam Peebles.
He looked at her steadily. She raised her hands and pressed them against her temples.
I didn't mean it. I don't know why I said it. My head. Sam, my poor head. It feels like it's splitting in two.
The oncoming train whistled as it crossed the Proverbia River and rolled into Junction City. It was the mid-afternoon freight, the one that charged through without stopping on its way to the Omaha stockyards. Sam could see it now. There's not much time, Sarah. It has to be done now. Turn around and look at the train. Watch it come.
Yes, she said suddenly. All right. Do what you want to do, Sam. And if you see it isn't going to work, then push me. Push me in front of the train. Then you can tell the others that I jumped, that it was suicide.
She looked at him pleadingly, deathly tired eyes staring into his from her exhausted face.
They know I haven't been feeling myself, the people in the program. You can't keep how you feel from them. After a while, that's just not possible. They'll believe you if you say I jumped. And they'd be right, because I don't want to go on like this. But the thing is, Sam, the thing is, I think that before long, I will want to go on.
Be quiet, he said. We're not going to talk about suicide. Look at the train, Sarah, and remember I love you. She turned toward the train, less than a mile away now and coming fast. Her hands went to the nape of her neck and lifted her hair. Sam bent forward, and what he was looking for was there, crouched high on the clean white flesh of her neck. He knew that her brain stem began less than half an inch below that place, and he felt his stomach twist with revulsion. He bent forward toward the blistery growth. It was covered in a spiderweb skein of crisscrossing white threads, but he could see it beneath, a lump of pinkish jelly that throbbed and pulsed with the beat of her heart.
Leave me alone,
Ardelia Lortz suddenly screamed from the mouth of the woman Sam had come to love.
Leave me alone, you bastard.
But Sarah's hands were steady, holding her hair up, giving him access. Can you see the numbers on the engine, Sarah? He murmured. She moaned. He drove his thumb into the soft glob of red licorice he held, making a well a little bigger than the parasite which lay on Sarah's neck. Read them to me, Sarah. Read me the numbers.
2, 6. Oh, Sam. Oh, my head hurts. It feels like big hands pulling my brain into two pieces.
Read the numbers, Sarah, he murmured, and brought the bullseye licorice down toward that pulsing, obscene growth.
5, 9, 5.
He closed the licorice gently over it. He could feel it suddenly wriggling and squirming under the sugary blanket. What if it breaks? What if it just breaks open before I can pull it off her? It's all Ardelia's concentrated poison. What if it breaks before I get it off? The oncoming train whistled again. The sound buried Sarah's shriek of pain. Steady. He simultaneously pulled the licorice back and folded it over. He had it. It was caught in the candy, pulsing and throbbing like a tiny, sick heart.
On the back of Sarah's neck were three tiny dark holes, no bigger than pinpricks.
"It's gone," she cried. "Sam, it's gone."
"Not yet," Sam said grimly. The licorice lay on his palm again, and a bubble was pushing up its surface, straining to break through. The train was roaring past the Junction City Depot now, the depot where a man named Brian Kelly had once tossed Dave Duncan 4 bits and then told him to get in the wind. Less than 300 yards away, and coming fast, Sam pushed past Sarah and knelt by the tracks.
"Sam, what are you doing?"
"Here you go, Ardelia," he murmured. "Try this." He slapped the pulsing, stretching blob of red licorice down on one of the gleaming steel rails. In his mind, he heard a shriek of unutterable fury and terror. He stood back, watching the thing trapped inside the licorice struggle and push. The candy split open. He saw a darker red inside trying to push itself out. And then the 220 to Omaha rushed over it in an organized storm of pounding rods and grinding wheels. The licorice disappeared, and inside of Sam Peeble's mind, that drilling shriek was cut off, as if with a knife. He stepped back and turned to Sarah. She was swaying on her feet, her eyes wide and full of dazed joy. He slipped his arms around her waist and held her as the boxcars and flat cars and tankers thundered past them, blowing their hair back. They stood like that until the caboose passed, trailing its small red lights off into the west. Then she drew away from him a little, but not out of the circle of his arms, and looked at him. "Am I free, Sam? Am I really free of her? It feels like I am, but I can hardly believe it."
"You're free," Sam agreed. "Your fine is paid, too, Sarah. Forever and ever, your fine is paid." She brought her face to his and began to cover his lips and cheeks and eyes with small kisses. Her own eyes did not close as she did this. She looked at him gravely all the while. He took her hands at last and said, "Why don't we go back inside and finish paying our respects? Your friends will be wondering where you are."
"They can be your friends too, Sam, if you want them to be."
He nodded. "I do. I want that a lot."
"Honesty and belief," she said, and touched his cheek.
"Those are the words." He kissed her again, then offered his arm. "Will you walk with me, lady?" She linked her arm through his.
"Anywhere you want, sir. Anywhere at all."
They walked slowly back across the lawn to Angle Street together, arm in arm.